Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, Dick Cheney is at it again, and we've cracked into the president's Palm Pilot again today, of course. Plus, we'll give you Barbara Streisand's marching orders for today with the liberal agenda hot off the fax machine. Right now, I'm joined by Mark Riley, and Sue Ellicott is back from baking her cake in Great Britain.
Yep, I had to fly thousands of miles just to make a cake.
Did you make it from scratch?
I did, from scratch, yes, with lemon icing and vanilla flavoring.
Oh, how exciting.
No pictures of the
that?
Topless sunbather?
Topless sunbather was there most of the day. It hit 31 degrees centigrade in London outside my flat yesterday, and there were a lot of naked, semi-naked sunbathers.
A relatively firm topless sunbather.
By the way, that's hot.
A pointed topless sunbather. Yes, sir.
I think my jet lag was escaping me, that one.
What are you talking about?
The pointed reference.
The hard nipples reference.
Oh, that one.
Was it not enough of a word game?
come on.
I had this weird thing where, like, I had a dream, the beginning of a dream last night. You ever have a dream that you're a child, but you have the adult brain? And, like, I just had, it was almost like bordering on a childhood memory. Like, I'm playing ball, like kickball with some of my friends, but I had brain. I'm like, this is stupid. There's no point to this. This is a stupid game. But that wasn't a child's
thought. Did you play kickball where you could get, like, hit by the ball? You were out? Is that how you played it?
No, we played it like baseball. You know, where you just, you know, you kick the ball. It was set up like baseball, and they rolled it, and you kicked it. And
yeah,
that was how we played it.
My kids played that in Central Park the other day. I wondered what it was.
And yep. I had a bad dollar store experience. I don't know what I'm thinking. I went to buy a Tupperware container at the dollar store, and, of course, it didn't work. Like, it didn't seal. And I'm thinking to myself, that's it. I'm bringing this back to the dollar store.
But give me back my dollar.
What if you bring anything back to the dollar store? It's broken. It's like, yeah, it's a dollar. What are you going to do? Here's another thing I'm pissed off at. My hero, this actually has something to do with Sue a little bit. Your ex-workmate, Elvis Mitchell,
yes,
is writing a book about Richard Pryor.
Uh-huh.
He says he's going to write a book about Richard Pryor. And Richard Pryor is still alive, crippled, and pissed off. Elvis Mitchell is running around trying to sell a $500,000 proposal, apparently, he could make. And Richard Pryor, who says Pryor tells us he's writing a follow-up to his – Pryor wrote a book called Pryor Convictions. Did you read it?
Yeah, I haven't read it.
It's great because he's sick and, you know, he's almost childish in his presentation of his life, and it's kind of a sweet thing. So he says he's going to write up a follow-up. So Mitchell, of all people, is writing a book about him since he said Mitchell, after first agreeing – was too busy to write the liner notes to Pryor's 9-CD box set. Okay, he couldn't do that. But now I don't know about Mitchell. This is Pryor speaking. This is beautiful. I don't know about Mitchell. But if he's writing a book about me, I figured I'd write one about him. Pryor joked after I finished the one I'm writing about myself. Commenting on the post, he's like pissed off. Now I don't understand, like, you know, where somebody gets off and being like sort of that disrespectful to a guy. This guy stands, like, Elvis Mitchell stands to make what, $500,000. Off of crippled Pryor.
If he gets the advance. I mean, this is just, he's touting it around. Why would anybody be flocking to pay him to do that particular book? What's his particular in with Richard Pryor? I mean,
apparently Pryor hates the guy. And I've never heard Elvis Mitchell say anything funny. I mean, I don't know. Does he have a sense of humor?
He writes complicated film reviews.
But I mean, I listen to him on the air. Does he have a sense of humor? I mean, you worked with him. I mean, how can a guy with no sense of humor?
I've seen him interview John Waters. He wasn't particularly funny then, and John Waters is a relatively funny guy.
But I feel bad for Pryor because Pryor's pissed. What else does he say?
I don't know if you have to be a funny guy to write a good book. You have to be able to interview somebody and write, but still, I don't know why.
He's certainly not going to interview Pryor with this attitude. If he can get $500,000 for writing all about me when the mother bleeper has never even met me, imagine how much I'm going to get for writing all about me when I am me.
They should do a kind of compendium version. There should be, you know, one of those books where you flip it up and it goes one way at the back and the other way at the front. There should be the Richard Pryor on Pryor and then the Elvis Mitchell who only has to interview other people about Pryor at the other end. It could be interesting.
I just think there's a limit to, like, this sort of sycophancy that goes on. You know, like, some people are just parasites. I mean, this guy's still alive. He's a crippled genius. And, you know, Elvis Mitchell, the guy's not even dead. He doesn't even have that much respect. He wouldn't write the liner notes. And now he might get $500,000 for, like, you know, for sitting there typing. And, you know, I don't even think Richard Pryor can hold a pencil.
How about we hold an auction for other people who have not met Richard Pryor to see how much money they could get for an unauthorized biography?
Well, his eighth wife, who was also his sixth wife, and him are writing the second book to his autobiography. And I just like think it's like, certainly if Mitchell dissed him on the liner notes, it's just disrespectful.
Is he still with his eighth wife?
He is. He is. Okay. And apparently this book is all about, you know, how you find out who your real friends are when you get sick. He's a dark dude, you know. He's like a deep, dark dude Pryor is.
I think a chapter from everybody would be great. All the wives. Two chapters by the sixth and the eighth wife, clearly, because she's there twice.
But none by Elvis Mitchell.
No, we'll do one. I haven't met him either. I'm sure I could do just as good a job.
No way.
What? As a guy who hasn't met him, I couldn't do just as good a job as anybody else who hasn't met him?
I mean, you got to have some reverence for the Pryor.
Well, you do.
Hey, by the way, how come I don't have that?
I don't know why.
I haven't met him. I do have reverence for Pryor.
She has reverence for
Pryor. Give me one Pryor bit.
Oh, Lord.
I can't do bits. That's not my job. You're the bits guy.
Look, before we go to the heavy news of the day, I did want to mark with some sadness the passing of a guy by the name of Ralph Wiley, who used to write for Sports Illustrated. Brilliant, brilliant writer. Published a couple of books called Why Black People Tend to Shout. Another book called What Black People Should Do Now. Just a really, really great writer. I've had the pleasure of interviewing, talking to Ralph a number of occasions. He died of a heart attack while watching the Pistons and Lakers playing basketball on Sunday night.
That's a good way to go.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Ralph was just a very, very intense guy.
Yeah.
He mentored a whole generation, actually, of black journalists.
Right.
Particularly black, no, black sports journalists, as a matter of fact. But Ralph was just one of those guys. He had no compromise and no quit in him. And I guess it's just a tragedy. He was a year younger than me. He was only 51.
Oh, that's got to scare you a little bit.
Oh, well, thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thanks loads, pal.
He hadn't thought of that.
Now, every time I get a little queasy, I go,
that's coming from a hypochondriac.
I know.
I mean, it took me a long time to transcend hypochondria. That's a good story. Someday I'll tell it, maybe.
Shouldn't have eaten that high-cholesterol Mars bar I brought back for you, Riley.
Oh, that was wonderful. That actually made my day today.
That'll take you 10 minutes closer to the Grim Reaper.
Now who's the ass? Yeah, I got one comment. You're like, oh, nice, Mark. But why don't I just dig the knife in a little deeper?
That's right.
Now that Neil Buck.
Now, before I go.
I almost did that.
Before I do. Now, you know, we reported yesterday, Mark, about the rush hour bombing
in
Baghdad that killed 13 people. It has produced troubling photos of Iraqis celebrating that violence. Among the 13 killed were 3 workers from General Electric and 2 bodyguards. I don't know whether that means that all the rest of the people who died were Iraqis and therefore not worthy of any mention in the U.S. press. Iraqi police reportedly stood by helpless and watched as young men looted the personal belongings of victims. The latest violence is happening just 15 days before power in Iraq is turned over to an interim government. The nation's interior minister said he thinks foreigners carried out this attack. Prime Minister Ayad Alawi says that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi is the likely culprit.
The blame guy.
He's Jordanian, right?
Yes, he's the guy who's accused of decapitating Nick Berg.
Wait, were these cops, were they helpless or were they frightened? I mean, Iraqi cops.
I think they backed out.
They're in a tough position now.
Yeah.
Because there's all kinds of, you know, tribal elements. Some of them, I guess, are hiding their faces when they have to go in and be cops because they're afraid some of the dudes that they're wrangling up are going to see them, recognize them, and put the tribal hit out on them, I guess.
I don't know whether it's a tribal hit or simply the idea that they don't want to – Iraqis do not want to be seen publicly as either arresting, detaining, or in any way harming other Iraqis. Now, assuming that there were Iraqis involved in the bombing, Iraqis died. So there is that responsibility, but I think the police end up being the visible face, the Iraqi visible face, going out and trying to detain other Iraqis. They don't want to do it.
Was the Americans, though, I mean, I know there are American troops there. Do you think that the American troops are
they
just...
They pulled out right alongside the Iraqis.
But are they standing there kind of going, come on, you guys, do something. This is your game now. Are they just standing there trying to get the cops to do something?
You know, that's an interesting question.
I have to assume that's sort of what's going on. It's like, you know, it ain't us. It's your job. And now the celebration thing, clearly the hearts and minds issue is not being won.
No.
Some kind of failure, clearly, because I thought that there was a big shift in the U.S. military over the last week or so, which was against taking defensive positions and in further training of the Iraqi police to be able to handle stuff like crowd control and volatile situations. And clearly the Iraqi police don't think they're able to control the crowd. And I think that you're right that they're scared of retaliation from other Iraqis. They're also scared of dying.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you're talking about car bombs in the street. This was apparently a convoy. That was considered to be a convoy of Westerners, a convoy of people who were involved with contractors like General Electric, who, by the way, say that they are not pulling out of the country. They're the ones that are supposed to be restoring the power grids. There are people that have problems with the way they're restoring the
power. I believe they pulled out once a little bit, and I guess they went back.
And they say they have no intention of leaving. But you're seeing now some of the biggest names in corporate America being linked, for example, this situation, General Electric, Paul Johnson in Saudi Arabia, Lockheed Martin. You see all of these different people working for people that were connected with the security people.
Well, Americans have been encouraged to leave Saudi Arabia. I think there's like 35,000 Americans working there, and they've been encouraged to get out.
No less than Richard Boucher has told them to get out.
Yeah, well, British Airways yesterday said it was no longer going to have any overnight stays of its flight crews in Saudi Arabia. No one feels they can protect anybody there now.
It's part of the neocon plan is to completely detach from Saudi Arabia, so I wonder what that conspiracy holds. Still ahead, the president's Palm Pilot plus liberal agenda and more right here on Air America Radio. Past the hour. Morning's edition. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley. Sue Ellicott is back from baking a cake in Great Britain. Our attention turns to the Vice President, Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney is now running around the country, once again, trying to establish that there was some sort of connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. He's been out there, presenting this again to the country of, I guess, stupid people.
Can you explain this to me? Because I find this utterly inexplicable.
Maybe this will help you out, okay? I'm going to give some quotes here. President Bush on September 17, 2003, we have no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September 11th attacks, okay? Condi Rice, September 15, 2003, we have never claimed that Saddam Hussein had either direction or control of 9/11. Okay, Donald Rumsfeld, September 16th, 2003. I've not seen any indication that would lead me to believe that I could say that, okay, in reference to the Hussein Al-Qaeda connection. Okay, Saddam Hussein said this. If we had a relationship with Al-Qaeda, we wouldn't be ashamed to admit it. All right? And this has been going on for 2 years now? I mean, it's been proven that there was no connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda until we invaded Iraq. I mean, there was no real connection between terrorists and Iraq until we went in there and created one. So he's out there, I guess, preaching to the people who are too stupid to take the information that is true and look at it as some sort of spin and believe this again to justify their feelings of support for this administration, which is heinous.
Well, he gave this speech before the James Madison Institute, a conservative think tank, which maybe you're right. Maybe
preaching to the choir.
But I, Mark, it escapes me. It totally escapes me.
People want to believe what they want to believe.
What's he going to come up with next? There's a secret Al-Qaeda plot to spring Saddam or something?
What can he come up with? Given his reasoning, he apparently would rather keep people uninformed and stupid so he can go on pillaging the planet as opposed to let them have access to information that, has some bearing in reality and truth.
Is this maybe the first news we've gotten that whole thing with Rudy Giuliani is out now that Cheney's back speaking again?
Yeah, I guess they tuned up his electronic, metallic, dark heart.
Yeah, well, and see, you can hear Dick Cheney, because I've heard him enough times. He was a patron of terrorism. He has long established ties with Al-Qaeda.
Talking about the side of his mouth.
Long.
Yeah, no details, mind you.
Just waiting for that lizard to crawl across his face into his ear.
Well, that's exactly it, Mark Riley, the no details thing. It's that how kind of sneaky and dangerous it is by repeatedly making this connection, but always stopping short of giving actual details. So he just leaves the impression so that it sort of foments ignorance.
It's what George Lakoff called framing. It is that the way that the conservatives steal the cultural language is by, positing these things that stick into the craw of people. And even if they're not true, even if you take all evidence of it being true away, that'll still stick in their head.
Right.
And that's what they choose to leave in their head.
And the same thing, you have to look at how the Bush administration could have got wrong it's when the State Department said that you know, terrorism had declined, the incidents of terrorism had declined.
They've gotten everything wrong.
They had to come back and say they were actually wrong. It was like, whoops, we made a mistake on that. All of that can often when you put out something like that and you make a statement that, you know, we're winning the war on terror because the incidents of terrorism are down, people don't hear the apology. It's the same in so much journalism.
How about the correction?
You can make exactly the apology, the correction. People don't ever hear that.
Because it feeds into what they want to believe anyways.
You know, they're very skillful at doing that. It's incredibly dangerous. And I think that, you know, the fact that most people get their news from television or in very kind of simple formulae, and very easy packages, and don't look at, you know, complicated, longer articles, they get away with it.
All those complicated, longer articles?
No, but I was reading something over the weekend when I was flying in the Atlantic from last year all about prison
abuse. I can't read
that.
It's too complicated for me.
It was from October 2003. Yeah. It's pages and pages. It was 22 pages I printed out from online. I mean, it makes it so obvious that there were real concerns about prison abuse. But we have only been really, it's only been public knowledge in the last few weeks.
Right. But getting back to the idea that people like that Cheney is like out there lying in order to sort of, you know, kind of foment more, you know, fury among, you know, the people that already believe in this administration is sort of like it's a crime in a way.
But let's flip this upside down for a minute. Let's ask ourselves whether maybe he made this statement to this conservative think tank because conservatives aren't really convinced of the rightness of the war in Iraq.
Right.
The level of troop strength, which is one of those under-the-cover issues that's going to come up soon. And maybe he's trying to say to people, yeah, well, we've said all along there was this link, because maybe some of those people he was speaking to that we figure were his best don't believe there was a link.
We're like dissenting. Is the polls showing that?
Well, he's like, you're saying that as the war gets worse, you know, and people are going to start thinking like, oh my God, this is out of control.
More conservatives are getting off the bus. That's
right, right. So he needs to get in there and go, come on, remember, you know, these are bad guys. Let's go, bad guys.
Because these are not neoconservatives.
Right, these are just saying.
These are straight up conservatives, and that has been a weakness with Bush in terms of his Iraq policy for the last couple months or so.
Fiscal conservatives are leaving.
Because remember I said earlier before we went on air today that there had been a report that Cheney had been speaking out in Colorado, which is a conservative state. It's expected to go for Bush. And he spoke to the Rocky Mountain Herald and made the connection, Rocky Mountain News, and made the connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11. And this didn't get picked up by national media because it wasn't on a network television show. It wasn't in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times.
Report it,
but it surfaced some months later in the New York Times when they were basically busting Cheney on manipulating facts to his neoconservative agenda. And it took months.
So your point is that he's
below the radar. He's sneaking in. He's astoundingly, depressingly kind of effective and shameless at going out there and kind of, you know, pitching his lies where he thinks they won't be detected by national media.
And let's not forget, the International Institute of Strategic Studies said that, you know, the U.S. occupation of Iraq brought 1,000 foreign Islamic fighters into the country who weren't there before. And it's pretty clear from all indications, and soon we'll get these new State Department numbers after they cooked the books and, you know, forgot to pulled the whole count in.
Actually, they were Powell, I thought Sunday said they could be done. Not that they would be, but that they could be done as early as yesterday.
Yeah, so I mean, we're going to find out. But I mean, we've been saying for weeks. I mean, we have all indications from, you know, real surveys that, you know, terrorism is not down. It's completely baffling to me that the country still has Bush in such a 56% approval rating on terrorism when it's clear that they are losing the war and they are misleading the American public on a daily basis.
And the other thing that Bush is going to have to deal with is the notion that, you know, Al-Qaeda, Saddam, however you want to slice it, there are a substantial number of Iraqis that have a problem with this transfer of power on June 30th, and we're seeing the violence leading up to that transfer, and I would think an effort to try and thwart it. Now, the question then becomes, can he, in fact, pull it off?
How is he going to pull it off? I mean,
I don't know.
All he can do is pull it off and hope that what Sue says happens, is that the media doesn't pick up on the truth of what's going on there. I mean, the list of things he has to do is insane.
I know.
I mean, he's got to come up with a plan for Iraqi governance, which is only partially completed now. He's got to replace assassinated government officials, which is going to be a real tough job recruiting job. You know, give the next 5 speeches and 6-part series of speeches on the status of Iraq. There's a million things that needs to be done that they're not done.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that. 2 weeks. Next 5 speeches. He's still got a lot of work to do. Straight ahead, the presidential palm pilot, the liberal agenda, and why don't young people vote? All that plus our Salon.com story of the day here on Air America Radio.
Three past the hour. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. It is now, this is Air America Radio, by the way. Air America Radio is what you're listening to. Air America Radio, Morning Sedition. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. It is now time for me to do, my buddy just mailed me the, Yes, he mailed it. Pony Express, they brought it over. He mailed it. It's all, I got three stamps on it. I'm opening it now. The Presidential Palm Pilot, which was downloaded from the Presidential Palm Pilot. By my guy in the Oval Office. Here's the schedule. 8 o'clock a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. Clinton bad again. Yesterday was an act. 9 o'clock a.m. Check Clinton portrait for signs of aging. 10:35 a.m. Meet with President of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai. Make sure everything's still in place for Operation Osama in October. Shouldn't that be Operation Frozen Osama? 11 a.m. Operation Defrost Osama in October. AM, 11 a.m., escort Karzai to fitting room, install new presidential puppet strings. Have him dance a little jig for you. Dance, little man. Noon, serve traditional Afghani lunch. Stale MREs dropped from helicopters.
Wow.
5 o'clock p.m., prep for congressional picnic. Order Colin Powell to pooper scoop to South Lawn. 6 o'clock p.m., congressional picnic. Note, for three-legged race, do not partner with Barney Frank. 6:15 p.m., sack race with Condi? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. 6:30 p.m. Coleslaw fight. Accused Daschle of starting it. 6:45 p.m. Note, do not eat mayonnaise if translucent. 8 o'clock p.m. Republicans versus Democrats volleyball game. Make Ted Kennedy's team be skins. 9 p.m. Lights out. Eat leftover Trent Lott Jell-O salad out of Tupperware.
Uh-oh.
There you go.
Yum.
On the phone now, we have Robert Schlesinger. He is a former correspondent for the Boston Globe and our Salon guest of the day. He's going to be talking about the Department of Homeland Security starting to enforce an obscure provision in immigration law requiring foreign journalists to seek special visas before entering the United States, even though their non-reporting countrymen can enter without any visa at all. Robert Schlesinger, how are you? What does this law say, and how does it apply to us or anybody? Sue Ellicott, for instance, an English journalist.
I have a green card, so not me. Don't ignore me.
Well, if you didn't have a green card and you were coming over to the U.S. to commit journalism.
Did you say commit journalism?
Yeah, exactly. you'd have to get a special visa as a journalist, whereas any regular or most regular English citizens are because the UK is part of the visa waiver program, which allows their 27 countries.
They're in tight with us.
They're in tight with us, and they can just hop on a plane and come to the US without any kind of, without getting a visa.
Right. I've had three of those I visas, but if you come in and you say you're a freelance journalist, or you come in and say you're any kind of journalist, and they ask you what you are reporting on, it doesn't matter if you say you're writing a piece about bananas in the supermarket. If you don't have a journalist visa, they will throw you into jail.
Which
that,
is,
has this happened?
At least 13 times last year, where reporters were stopped and arrested, and in many cases strip searched and handcuffed and put in jail.
And now they've got a feature article as opposed to something they were going to report on.
Well, actually, that literally happened. There was a recent article in the Guardian where a woman was coming over to do, I don't know what she was planning to write on, but she ended up writing 2,400 words on her experience in the L.A. Being imprisoned
in L.A. Right. Gonzo journalism lives.
It was a very innocuous entertainment thing. It wasn't anything at all politically sensitive.
So what are they accused of when this happens?
Trying to sneak into the country as journalists.
Oh, man.
And how does America differ from other countries and how the attitude it takes to that sneaking around trying to commit journalism?
Well, there are some countries that require journalist visas, like Iran and other countries that don't really have the freedom of the press that the U.S. Is supposed to enjoy.
So we're in the same category as Iran and Cuba on this.
Yeah, exactly. But most of the countries that we typically like to place ourselves with don't actually require that journalists have to declare themselves before going into those countries.
So let me ask you, what is the list of countries that has to have these visas?
You know, I don't know exactly, but it is countries like Iran and Cuba and places that the U.S. would not generally like to.
It's basically the axis of evil and the United States.
Yeah, pretty much.
So almost everybody, given this administration.
Now, is this being done to track the movements? I mean, is Homeland Security actually tracking what the journalists do while they're here?
I don't think so. I mean, it's one of those things. I can't tell whether this was whether the stepping up and enforcement of this is a specific decision taken by someone high up in the administration and said, okay, here's a chance to really crack down on those bad foreign journalists, or whether it was just some stupid bureaucratic decision of, well, here's a law that we really haven't done enough, and we've got to, we got to start enforcing this because, well, it's a law.
Yeah. So thanks a lot, Robert Schlesinger. Thanks for talking to us. His article can be found on Salon.com. He's a former correspondent for the Boston Globe. Terrific.
Wow.
Now, what did you mean that we're the same as Iran and Cuba, Sue?
Well, just because they're the countries that ask for journalist visas. Other countries, if you're going into France as a journalist, if you're going into Britain as an American journalist or into Australia, you just arrive and you say, you arrive in immigration in Australia, go, hello, mate, and they stamp your passport and you go in and you write your piece or you do your stuff and you come back.
Got it.
It's just interesting that the country that most champions free speech in the United States and democracy is the one that is, the most restrictive on allowing kind of free entry to journalists.
Are you kidding? Now if you're a journalist, you go to the White House, they tell exactly what you should say.
I know exactly when they're going to relax this particular rule.
Yeah, when Kerry's president?
Well, that's possible. But if not, if we have Republicans up till 2012, if New York gets the Olympics that year, they will relax that.
Yeah,
because there'll
be
5 zillion journalists from all over the world who are all going to try and descend on New York. And believe me, there'll be international incidents galore.
Yeah. When I was a student, Mark Riley, in college, I don't know how – I wasn't that politically active until my last year because I didn't think it mattered that much, and I was just automatically against Reagan, because I didn't like him for whatever reason I had then, though he did give us punk rock music, not intentionally, but as a reaction to him. Now it seems that students have really gone – down the stupid hole.
They've got their heads jammed in their latte cups.
Only 35% of the students surveyed in a recent survey said presidential voting will create a lot of change, compared to 47% who thought so in March 2001. And that's like it's unbelievable, how they prioritize things. And talk about kids who are out of the loop, or people that are out of the loop, they just take little sound bites. No one's doing the homework in college.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you go to a lot of poor communities in this country, you'll find the same kind of numbers. People believing that, government, politics really has nothing to do with them. It took me a while because, I was a wild-eyed radical when I was young. Was into taking over buildings when I was in college and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, I had no interest in voting for a while. But once I started to realize exactly what politics does and what politicians have the power to do.
You got to do it. You got to get out there and activate.
Absolutely, because it impacts every single area. Those same students could find it much, much harder to go to college depending on who's in elected office.
So they might pay attention to the draft coming back.
That is the one thing they agree on. 3 out of 4 of them are against
really?
It. Wow. So here, we're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We want to hear from college students and young people out there whether you think elections matter, because I know grown-ups who don't. So give us a call. You can email us, too, sedition@airamericaradio.com. Five past the hour, Mark Maron here. Good morning. I'm with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, this morning's edition on Air America Radio.
Good morning.
We are reaching out to college students, 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We're talking about a recent poll that, of course, says college students don't care, don't think that voting can make a difference, when obviously it can. And I talk to a lot of adults that are like this, like, what difference does it make? They're all the same. It's like, not now. They're not now. You know, I mean, even if they're both politicians, even if they both represent the same evil, the type of evil we have in there now is completely unacceptable. The man-child emperor must go.
I'm going to stand up for young people. I got it. I got it, even because I'm the oldest
one here.
But, you know, these kind of surveys come out periodically. Young people don't vote in large numbers. I forgot what the percentage was, 18 to 24 in the last election. It wasn't very high.
Well, they're busy. You know, they've got hangovers to nurse.
Busy, and they really, I'll be honest with you, we as the older generation, certainly I as the older generation, haven't done a great job in showing them exactly what the political process is all about and how it impacts their lives. Ask a kid who's sitting somewhere in an outdoor restaurant, an outdoor cafe somewhere, how that happened.
But how about this? How about just this? Look, okay, if you don't know what what to think about politics, you don't know anything about the issues, just do this. Take an hour, go to the booth. Just pull the Democratic lever. Just pull it down. Just go in there, vote for Kerry. How's that?
That's a workout.
If you've never done it before, it's kind of cool. You get to go in. Sometimes there are curtains. Sometimes there are a little machine. It feels kind of official. It's an exciting new experience. Brian in New Jersey, what's up?
How's it going?
Okay.
Hey.
I'm from Bergenfield. I know Mark Riley's from Teaneck, so.
Oh, yeah?
Englewood.
Yeah, but, Englewood, all right. There you
Englewood,
go.
Yeah, yeah.
But I go to Rutgers University.
Okay.
I'm a senior there, so I actually, I'm a major in American Studies. And a lot of us down there actually are, you know, pretty conscious of what's going on and really are motivated to vote. So I just want to call up and, you know, defend college students.
Where are they coming from? What's the pulse of the student body there? Do you know?
I mean, see, a lot of people, like, they're not too informed on, like, the specific issues. But as you were saying, like, if they were just going there and just, you know, pull for Kerry.
Yeah.
That's kind of what the feeling is.
Oh, that's all
right.
Because
the school, you know, we have actually, an alternate school, like, newspaper called The Median.
Yes.
Which gets a lot of,
The rebel paper?
Yeah.
Counterculture.
Yeah, and a lot of kids read that.
All right.
And they tear Bush apart, so.
Oh, right on.
They really, as long as they just see all that negative stuff, and now with the new movie coming out next week and everything, it's going to, you know, a lot of young people there. I know
Fahrenheit 9/11.
Motivated to vote.
You're talking about Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yeah.
Well, right on, man. Thanks for calling us, Brian. Nice talking
to you. From Bergenfield.
Yeah. I got New Jersey blood, you know.
Yeah.
I think it is a question of, like Matt Riley said, of making sure that students are informed. This matters has to start presumably in civics classes through middle school and high school.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in America, we don't have that.
Don't you?
I'm kidding. 866-303-2270.
We don't have it in Europe.
866-303-AAR0. Corey in Arizona. How are you, Corey?
Good. How you doing?
All right,
hey,
man.
Corey.
How's it out there? Is it like 110 degrees there?
Yeah, 106 coming up today.
Oh, man. But dry. It's dry heat. Yeah.
Dry heat.
Yeah. So what's on your mind, buddy?
You know, I'll tell you this. I actually have called to call out college students. I'm actually 25 years old. I'm a second-year master's student at Arizona State University. And, I mean, talk about a topic that will kill a date in a second is talking about politics.
Oh, yeah? Hey, why?
That's the wrong date.
Do they just get glazed over and sort of go, uh-huh?
Oh, my God. Because they want to, you know, it's like stab you in the eye. I grew up actually, you know, with parents, I mean, you know, in their mid-60s, I could have an African-American male who were really deeply involved in the civil rights movement.
Uh-huh.
I was always taught that it was really important to be politically involved in the vote. My brother really cares a lot about it, but it's like, it seems like I'm kind of on an island all by myself half the time. I mean,
yeah, just in terms of people not really engaging in the discourse?
Oh, they just don't seem to care. I mean, you do get your groups on campus, actually. They have the little booth outside, and they sit around, and they pass out flyers and things of that nature. You got your Bush people, you got your Kerry people. Obviously,
yeah.
I'm pretty much a Kerry person.
Right.
But, I mean, but the thing is, for the most part, if you try to raise those issues with most people, it's just impossible to get them to understand how important the process is.
Well, I think a lot of people are, and thanks for your call, Corey, I think a lot of people are uninformed. I know that, you know, even me, who is, you know, relatively uninformed a lot of times, you know, you feel uncomfortable to engage. You don't feel like you have the right to engage, especially if you're talking to somebody who's like, hey, dude, you're wrong. You know what I mean? Bush is the king. Bush is God. You have to listen. And they'll list off all these points. And you're like, you know what, dude, I got no time for this, you know,
yeah.
But I
have a nice day.
Call us. We're going to keep taking your calls. 866-303-2270. 866-303-AAR0. We'll catch you on the other side here on Air America. Good morning. It's Morning Sedition. Mark Maron with Sue Ellicott, Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. Air America Radio. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. We're talking to young people and people who don't think that voting matters. There was a survey released that most students think, yeah, I don't know, it doesn't really make a difference, you know, who you vote for. It's all the same ass. Colby, how are you, man?
Hey.
Hey, good morning. What's going on?
I just wanted to make a comment that this election we're going to see will probably make history due to the craziness going on.
Yeah,
a lot of hip hop artists are, every time they do a show, they're doing the voter registration.
Are you going to be voting?
I'm not allowed to vote due to my criminal history and my situation right now.
Oh, wow.
But everyone I talk to, you know, I let them know how important voting is, and they see it. But a lot of people realize that.
Hey, do me a favor, will you?
Hello?
I need you to do me a favor.
Okay.
Double check and make sure that you can't vote.
Right. Oh, no, I believe me. I'm very well aware that I will not be voting.
You won't be allowed, huh?
Nah.
So, but you're spreading the word, though, right? What are you doing now?
Oh, definitely. Right now, I'm going to school.
Oh, right on, man.
I work in a corporate law firm, so my eyes are open to a lot of craziness being taken place.
Yeah, I bet.
But a lot of people feel that there are secret societies that these presidents belong to, which they owe allegiance to anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, you know,
a lot of people feel hopeless.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for your call, Colby.
I actually feel encouraged that more young people will vote in this election than the past ones, because the survey shows that students think that September 11th terrorist attacks are more important for America's history than the attack on Pearl Harbor, than the stock market crash of 1929, and the assassination of JFK in 1963. I mean, if they think that is the most historically important event, I think that has to galvanize people to go out and vote.
You would hope so. Colby, I just wanted to reach out to you. I mean, the presidents are in secret societies, and they're not unlike the corporate law offices you might be working in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Aaron in Staten Island, what's up, buddy? Thanks for holding on.
Oh, no problem, guys.
Yeah. Hey.
It seems to me that the apathy comes from a bunch of sources. For one thing, you've got, you know, Ralph Nader on the side saying there's no difference between Gore and Bush and, you know, now Kerry and Bush. And I love Ralph, but I think he's just plain wrong.
There's definitely a difference this time, man.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a difference the last time.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Gore's book.
But the whole idea that, you know, like these guys are all the same, they may be all the same in that they're politicians, but, I mean, come on. You know, Bush is like a corrupt, you know, evil bastard.
Yeah, yeah. And also with all this negative advertising, it seems to really dissuade people from participating in the process and really become down on the whole thing. It just seems like this dark hole. I can't change anything. And
you mean the Bush negative advertising about Kerry?
Primarily, yeah, but I think on both sides.
Well, I don't know. Kerry's being pretty positive. He's kind of, you know, he's trying to stay away from that, you know. And I think that a lot of people get mobilized by evil advertising, and a lot of people, that's all they, you're right, they don't do the research, but my fear is that a lot of people vote, like, you know, poll numbers change depending on advertising sometimes, briefly, but it's sad to me that people are that easily hypnotized.
Well, it's not just being hypnotized, Mark. The bottom line here is that age and income determine voter participation more than any other single factor.
They're not taking my money, I'm an old man.
Young people don't vote.
Yeah.
Rich people do vote.
Right.
In disproportionate numbers. The last time I saw it, it's like 72% of people over $100,000.
Yeah, of course. They don't want to lose their money. There's our liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Get your pencils and your notebooks. One, every time someone sneezes, loudly say, "Goddess bless." Two, try to breed a genetic line of stem cells that are pure Democrat. Three, organized black tie cocktail party for Saddam Hussein's legal defense fund. Four, stand on Ronald Reagan's grave until you're sure that he's dead. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, Bush should pay for the deficit by selling his plasma for the next 50,000 years, unquote. See, that should be a conversation stopper there. You know what I'm saying, Riley?
I think that would be an ultimate conversation.
You're like, what? We're talking about politics.
Right behind, Bush is going to kill us all anyway.
Yeah.
We are minutes away from the next hour of Morning Sedition. Coming up, Under God is In. We'll talk to the Reverend Barry Lynn about Monday's Supreme Court decision on the Pledge of Allegiance. And, of course, Mark Maron shares his dream diary. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, a milestone for George W. and his journey to sobriety, plus my dream diary, the presidential daily briefing, and the reverend who wants to put God in his place. That's coming up. Right now I'm joined by Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott.
Hello, good morning.
Yes. Hello.
Welcome.
Hey.
Good morning. So we were got some email here, speaking of God.
Uh-oh.
He wrote to us?
Again.
Other people wrote on his behalf.
He just keeps saying, what's with the British chick?
you're no good.
Oh, you know, gods, they go after British chicks.
But the thing is like yesterday we talked about God. We talked about religion. And we talked about, you know, atheism. We had an atheist on the show. It was very exciting.
Who said I didn't have any soul?
Who said, yeah. But, you know, every time we bring up religion, I catch a load of crap from people. Do you know what I mean? And I'll tell you, honestly, I've met, you know, liberals are the hardest bunch to wrangle into an idea. I mean, all of you think you have, you know, the opinion that is necessary to dictate the course of this network. And it becomes tedious. Do you know what I mean? Some of it becomes very tedious. We're doing fine over here. We appreciate your input. And certainly the people that like the show, we love having you. And the people that don't like the show, we're glad you're listening as well. But this is one. I'm writing because this morning, spelled M-O-U, you kind of stepped on my toe, figuratively speaking. This morning's show featured the atheist point of view, and I respect that. I truly believe everybody has a right on opinion. However, the person that you had as a guest, in my mind, is a fanatic in his own way. He is an atheist fanatic with anti-Catholic agenda. He actually accused the Pope and the Vatican as being directly responsible for population boom. Yeah. And for starving people in this world by influencing countries with its power. Wow, where do we start? And he goes on to talk about China. Yeah, China is a great example. They have a population control policy. It's called, hey, let's throw out the girl one. But so, Mark Maron, next time you say Christian conspiracy or Christian agenda to me, it sounds like you are calling my name, even though I don't have a religious agenda, aside than to, you know, write me a letter and tell me that every time I mention religion that, you know, it bothers you somehow, but you don't have a religious agenda. I'm a 27-year-old Catholic, believe in choice, believe in science. Served this country for 4 years in the Marine Corps, saw a grown man cry, saw a non-believer convert instantly when the bullets started to fly. Nice poetic ending. Best wishes. Elvis. Appreciate your input,
Elvis.
Buddy. Yeah. But, you know, we are well represented here. You know, I am, you know, an atheist of sorts. When I say Christian conspiracy, I think I'm referring directly to this administration's, you know, pandering and use of the fanatical Christian right to dictate policy. If that's not clear to some of you people that I'm not anti-religion, I really am not. You can be whatever you want. And when I say that, you know, that religion and belief is sort of delusionary, that's not a negative thing. It is. You know, it's like if you're a rational person, you know, the thing is when you believe, you know, that's all you can believe as no matter you can't see it as rational or irrational. It's what you believe. But from where I'm standing, all different types of religion are organized delusions that you choose to believe in. That's not being negative. That's being very reasonable. Like Mark Riley. Mark Riley here is a believer. Sue Ellick, he's a believer in
I am an Episcopal.
Episcopal. Yeah. Sue Riley is a believer.
Sue Riley, that's my sister.
I mean, Sue Ellicott is a sort of has a vague spiritual idea that she believes in most of the time, but is
no,
not.
No, I think I believe I still hold on to the ethics component of the church upbringing that I had through my school. My parents
Which
were absolutely
good.
Non-religious. They were horrified when I went to church twice a day
but
on
that's
my
good.
Bicycle.
That's good. There's a lot to be learned from Christian ethics, and I'm certainly not negating that. I don't want to alienate all Christians, thus the ones that are snotty and think that they can determine, you know, what kind of programming we're going to do here. But also, I have some pro-atheists. Thank you so much for having Frank Zindler as a guest on your show this morning. I'm an atheist and humanist living in ultra-conservative Georgia, and it's rare that we hear a representative of our own community giving a voice in the national media. Yeah. I enjoy your show and support the network, but why must you perpetuate the right-wing myth that the left are nothing but immoral atheists and the right has a monopoly on God and religion? I don't think anyone was saying anything about immorality. You know, that's your own assumption, talking in your own brain. That's your own self-censorship, you know, speaking. And then this person goes on. Someone else went on to tell me the numbers, the percentage of how many people go to church. And that, who do I think, well, here it is. You are dealing with 64% of America that says they attend religious services. If you want to run off swing voters for the sake of a few laughs, then you are just negligent. Your personal views on God go for a bit. This is too important to take atheist cheap shots that alienate listeners. Ronnie, see ya.
I don't think that's right, actually.
Wait a minute. It's nice having you. It was nice having you, Ronnie. You know what? If we lose you, I don't care. How's that? But I appreciate your input. Appreciate it.
But I don't think that figure of 64% of Americans attend church. I mean, I don't know if that's regular or irregular, if that counts the people who go to, you know, Mass on Christmas Eve.
But even if it's true,
it's about 1 in 3 regularly go.
Whatever that percentage is, I don't know. But even if it is true, it's like it doesn't mean I'm trying to alienate you. You know, but I appreciate the programming note, Ronnie.
Maron, we're going to put you in purgatory.
Soon. What do you mean? I'm in it.
I'm in it already.
I got a ways to put Maron in purgatory.
Yes.
We're going to make him sit and watch a television network called The Word Channel.
Uh-huh.
It's on like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's nothing but African-American Christianity.
Oh, really? I thought his idea of purgatory might be the BBC.
That might be it, too. But, Maron, The Word Channel will either drive you absolutely mad, or you'll convert.
What is it? It's a black Christian network?
It's a black Christian network.
Dude, I've been so close to converting all my life. I am a proud lost person. Do you understand? It's not like, you know, it's like some people think like, you know, I'm being negative. Look, I'm open. I'm willing. You know, lay it on me. I can believe for a few minutes. I don't mind that. I don't mind being lost. Being lost means that I'm constantly searching for something, which means that I generate things in my brain. It means that the world is interesting to me. If I resolve my fundamental religious problem, my fundamental spiritual quest, if that becomes resolved, who will I be but another pawn in someone else's game?
Do you remember the Blues Brothers?
When
Belushi and Aykroyd went to James Brown's church?
Yes.
And they had the epiphany.
And he fell down.
And the light. Do you see the light? And the light came through.
I love watching, you know, tapes, and I would love to watch that channel because black churches are so much more engaging and so much more, you know, physical and rejoicing. It's very exciting, and I am elevated by that. The only thing that annoys me a little bit, the only thing that doesn't quite connect with me, is the whole idea of it being about something.
But I don't think that you'd have to.
You know,
have to stall out if you came to that conclusion. I mean, remember when we had Gene Robinson on, the first, you know, ordained gay Episcopalian bishop the other week, and he said something which I thought was really interesting, and that was a great recruitment tool for people who think that the Bible is too rigid, and he talked about living scripture and how you cannot, the Bible is not set in stone, that everything has to apply to modern life, and it's all open to interpretation, and you know, we change what we think about it, and it applies to the way we think about issues and contemporary lives.
Every day I get a dispatch.
He was very convincing.
I get a dispatch from H. Torah. Someone put me on the H. Torah mailing list, which is an Orthodox mailing list.
Friend or foe?
It's someone who thought I could use the spirituality. You know, people have reached out to me. Christians have reached out to me. You know, the
ex-girlfriends.
Reach out to me? Why would an ex reach out to me? You know what I mean? Like, you know, but they've said to me, I've gotten the letter of like, you know, I think you have a God-shaped hole. I love the God-shaped hole once. So I read this stuff all the time. I read interpretations of the Torah. I read, you know, how people behave in a moral, ethical way. But I think you can do that, as Sue was making a point of earlier, that, you know, that doesn't have to be connected to a belief system, to a dogma, to, you know, some sort of, you know, reason, like the guy yelling at me, like, who do you think you're talking to here? 64%, like, he's all worked up about, you know, what he thinks should be said and how it should be said. And that is exactly the problem with religion, is that they get all worked up about what they think should be done and how it should be done, and they try and shove it down people's throats, you know?
Right, not everybody, but the extreme, the unpalatable ones. Some of them are very, very open and compassionate and understanding.
Yeah, but some of those
same
people,
tolerant.
Some of them start with the same thing, which is like, you know, I'm not religious, but shut up. In the name of God,
you know what
shut
my
up.
Biggest problem is with people who have, quote, gotten religion.
But that's like people who've given up smoking. They're the worst.
Yeah, you know, the recent converts to whatever it is. I don't care what religion it is.
Right.
I don't care what denomination.
The born
ones
again.
That just got it.
Right.
You know, and in many cases, they get it because they've just been through some crisis in their lives.
Jehovah's
and this
Witnesses,
whole thing
like
has helped them get through the crisis or helped them see the crisis differently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I understand people's crisis. I understand people's pain. But I don't want somebody to, you know, transmute that pain onto me as a way to try and get me to see the world the same way they do.
And we certainly don't want it. It's self-serving when it comes out of a personal crisis.
We certainly don't want it in our government.
No.
No, we do not.
Absolutely not.
That we agree on.
Reverend Barry Lynn is going to talk to us about that next, along with the Dream Diary and some other stuff here on Air America Radio.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved.
Past the hour, morning sedition. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron. This is Mark Riley. This is Sue Ellicott. We're all here together.
Hello.
About ready to read my dream diary for last night. It's kind of interesting because we had this big discussion yesterday, but it makes sense. I bring these to my therapist on Thursday. Here's my dream diary from last night. So I'm a stem cell, all right? I'm tiny and squishy. I live in a jar in a freezer at a hospital with hundreds of other stem cells, and I got to tell you, some of them are totally hot. Hello, ladies. Check out this mitochondria. Go ahead. That's pure muscle, baby. So everything's pretty cushy until one day I hear voices fighting. The first one says, but we need stem cell research. Someday they'll help us cure Alzheimer's and AIDS and blindness and birth defects. The other one says, if you kill that cell, you're killing Jesus all over again. And then Jesus, who works as a night janitor at the hospital, steps up and says, no, not really. The way I see it, if it saves lives, it's cool with me. I mean, come on. Hundreds of cells die every time you scratch your ass. Jesus said that. And though I'm not much too simple an organism to have a brain, I thought to myself, you know, Jesus has a point. I'd much rather cure Parkinson's than end up lining the bottom of some dude's crusty underpants. Luckily, one day a doctor takes me out of a jar, and a few months later, I do cure Parkinson's. So then I'm a celebrity, and I'm getting all the hot girl stem cell action I can handle. Then I subdivide 3 trillion times and become me. Check out this mitochondria. Go ahead, baby. That's pure muscle. I wake up, and my bed is filled with Bunsen burners. What is that about?
Oh, no.
What is that about?
I
don't think our next guest can help us either. Reverend Barry Lynn is the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We're going to talk to him now a bit about the Pledge of Allegiance hearing with Michael Newdow yesterday. Got pushed out of court on a technicality. And also we want to talk to him a little bit about Bush trying to kiss up to the Pope. Good morning, Reverend Barry Lynn. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, and I can't explain your dream, but you're going to have to call my dream hotline, and that costs $4.99 a minute.
It's worth it.
As long as you got a dream hotline, I'm going to call it.
Okay.
But you know, there. What do you think of this case that just got thrown out of court on this technicality? Under God an infraction on church and state?
No, it absolutely is, and Michael Newdow was quite heroic in trying to bring
this
to the attention of the court. Of course, he won every time except the one time that mattered the most, and that was yesterday. The Supreme Court basically said, look, he's a non-custodial parent, or at least he's not custodial enough to have standing in this case, and so they threw it out. Now, that was yesterday. I would expect that within the next few days, someone will announce that they will literally be bringing this same lawsuit, that they'll start in California, that it will follow the same trajectory through the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals out in the western part of the country, and that it will end up back at the United States Supreme Court in 2 or 3 years.
Right. Well, they say it's like, you know, they keep comparing to the In God We Trust, you know, on the money, that it doesn't really, it's just ceremonial in a way. And I don't know if you know this, the In God We Trust was originally put there as a disclaimer.
Yeah. You know, In God We Trust doesn't work terribly well if the theory of In God We Trust is that we're going to become better people because we carry
money,
a holy piece of money, because that's the same money that we use for whatever vices we commit. You know, if proximity to holy words really made us holy people, then of course we wouldn't be having any adultery in motel rooms, because of course there's a Gideon Bible next to the bed.
Yeah.
So I do think a lot of people have very simplistic views about all of this. Now, the religious right, of course, yesterday was ecstatic about this because now they don't have to even think about pushing through a constitutional amendment to try to return under God to the pledge. But they do know that on the merits, this is not a difficult case. If you invoke the words under God, if that doesn't have any religious significance, I think that's probably bad news for religious people.
Right.
As much as it is for anybody else. I like to think, as a person who has of faith myself, that under God means something. And, of course, when government sometimes appropriates the images or the ideas of religion, mm-hmm. They do tend to screw it up.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Lynn, was this just the Supreme Court trying to kind of duck out of making a decision on something that would be very political in an election year?
Yeah, I actually think that there's a strong case to be made that they did not want to pour gasoline on the fire of the culture war that's going on, particularly in an election year, and that's one of the reasons you duck a case.
Are they right to do that?
Well, it depends. I would like to think that the other five people, you know, three of these members, Justice Thomas, not surprisingly, Justice O'Connor, a little more surprisingly, and Justice Rehnquist, not surprisingly, said they wanted to reach the merits and that Mr. Newdow had no case that the Pledge of Allegiance indeed was constitutional. But the other five did not express an opinion, and I think there's a strong case that the other five felt that he did make the case, mm-hmm. but simply wanted to avoid throwing this out there in the middle of an election year.
Mm-hmm. The Reverend Barry Lynn is Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Reverend Lynn, you said something that was very interesting in terms of the line going back to the Supreme Court. You mentioned the Ninth Circuit, which is the circuit out in San Francisco, which is a pretty controversial court in and of itself. Isn't President Bush trying to get one of, quote, his guys, unquote, on the Ninth Circuit? Hasn't he kind of targeted that particular circuit to perhaps make it a bit more conservative than it is now? Could that have an impact if this case comes back up the ladder again?
Yes, actually it could, and he has a very controversial nominee named Janice Rogers Brown, who's a woman who apparently doesn't believe the Bill of Rights does apply to the states, which is a pretty far-out view. The only person on the current court that has that view is Clarence Thomas.
And she's an African-American woman, by the way.
Yes, she is, and that doesn't prove much if you're Janice Rogers Brown, because she's one of the most ultra-conservative judges out there. She's been held up by the United States Senate, and I suspect will be for the rest of this term, and with any luck for the rest of anybody's term that's
eternity
in November.
So given that you're the director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, now do you feel or know or, you know, what's your pulse on the group within the administration and this administration's desire to not only pander to the Christian right, but to create a theocracy of some sort?
Yeah, well, it's very real. Karl Rove, who, of course, is the top political advisor to the president, has said that he must find 3 to 4 million new evangelical voters to come to the polls and vote for George Bush. I mean, he's been very specific about it. The target audience for many of the phrases and words and speeches that President Bush gives are that core audience. And now we found out recently, of course, that he's also trying to target Catholics in a slightly different way. On his trip to the Vatican recently, George Bush apparently asked the Pope, through the Pope's Secretary of State, to tell American bishops to be clearer about the social issues that are at the very core of the Bush campaign. This is extraordinary. I mean, when I first heard this, I thought it was a joke that any American president would go to the Vatican and say, listen, Holy Father, I need your help. Crack down on those American bishops. Tell them the important issues are abortion and gay marriage so that more people will vote for me. And
it's
pretty
arrogance.
Much went that way.
Unbelievable. We're gonna. This is very interesting stuff. We're going to take some calls,
sure.
and you're going to stay on the line here. We're going to come back. Why don't you give us a call at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-AAR0. That's for Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. This is a knowledgeable guy. We'd love to hear from you, so stay tuned.
Yeah, I want to, when we come back, talk a little bit about this whole culture war thing, because I wonder sometimes whether or not it's just a little bit manufactured. this whole idea that you know, the conservatives kind of bring up these sort of, in my judgment, non-issues whenever they're trying to pander, win some votes, get some of those, 3 to 4 million people, evangelicals that, mm-hmm. that George W. Bush needs to win this next election.
I'd like to ask him about, you know, how he dares go to the Vatican when the Pope was so against the war.
I'm just it's like I'm constantly accused of Christian bashing, and now we have a guy that can really flesh out the difference between a Christian and the type of influences that these guys have in the administration.
Yeah, and you can't accuse Barry Lynn of Christian bashing.
That's right.
He is a Christian minister. Yeah. When we come back, more with the Reverend Barry Lynn on separation of church and state, and we'll add you on the phones. 866-303-AARZERO. That and the Presidential Daily Briefing here on Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, and Air America Radio. We've got Reverend Barry Lynn, the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, on the phone, ready to take questions from you. Call us at 866-303-AARZERO, 866-303-2270. You know, after all those emails and all the sort of, you know, snotty judgments of me and my, you know, views about your supposed views about, you know, what you think I think about Christianity, I can't believe that, you know, these phones aren't filled up with questions for a guy who knows what he's talking about. But we do have, you know, quite a few calls. But, you know, give us a call. Edie in Georgia. Edie?
Hi.
How are you?
Hi, Edie.
Oh, hello. I love you guys. I'm so glad I got through.
You got a question for Barry Lynn?
Huh?
You got a question for the Reverend Barry Lynn?
Yes, sort of. When I was growing up in the 50s and 60s in Jacksonville, Florida, we did the pledge, the Lord's Prayer, and were forced to memorize a Bible quotation.
Right.
In the public school in Jacksonville, Florida.
Wow.
And I wondered if anything like that was still going on.
Are you kidding? Oh, yeah, it's a good question.
I'm living in Georgia now, purely because of the climate.
We just had where was that news story? Thank you.
That
for
was in Tennessee.
And it was
Ray
Bible
County,
classes.
Tennessee.
Well, maybe, let's see, Reverend Barry Lynn, what do you know about it?
Yes, I mean, sometimes even in those places where school prayer, for example, if it's organized by the city or by the school district, should not be happening. In about one-third of schools, it happens anyway. So even when you win a great constitutional victory, unless it's put into practice and into the hearts of the people who are administering the system, it still happens.
One-third of schools in the country?
One-third of schools in parts of the country.
Okay.
Surveys are done primarily in the South, but I wouldn't want the North to get away with it.
And this is sort of...
It should get away with anything because... And here's what is happening, Edie. One of the things that's going on is that new creative ways to bring organized religion into the school. There are bodybuilders, for example, who will come. They're Christian bodybuilders. There are people who will come in and do an anti-drug lecture and then hand out leaflets about where you can get saved, presumably after, you know, you've slept off the pizza. So there are plenty of ways that this happens. And the answer is religion has no place except in your private conduct in an American public school. You want to wear a T-shirt that says Black Sabbath rules, you should be able to wear it. If you want to wear a Bible verse like John 16:3 or John 3:16, which is the accurate one, you can wear that too.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that these people also feel like they're sort of revolutionaries, and a lot of them will fight for their, you know, to get any ground. They see that they feel like they're losing ground, so they think that by making the kids pray in school that they're actually, you know, living their revolution.
No, absolutely. I mean, you've got David Limbaugh, you know, who is, of course, Rush Limbaugh's younger and brighter brother, has written a book called Persecution with a lion on the cover to symbolize, of course, the fact that Roman emperors occasionally fed Christians to lions, but it's so insulting to compare the Christian martyrs to the kinds of stories he tells in that book. Like some little kid was not allowed to distribute a candy cane with a little historical and religious message attached to it to all of his classmates. Well, question one is, why would any school lawyer allow someone to distribute candy, possibly to diabetic children? I mean, you just don't hand out candy. But the notion that that's anything comparable to what happens in communist China to Christians today, or what happened to Christians in the Roman Colosseums, is almost blasphemous.
It's ridiculous. We got some calls. We're talking to the Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Call us at 866-303-2270. Kathy in Connecticut. Kathy, how are you?
Hi, good morning.
Nice
Hi,
to talk to you.
I have been so much loving Air America, and we thank you very much.
Okay, so you're not mad at me?
I did want to take this opportunity because you're talking exactly about one thing that bothers me,
mm-hmm.
and that is that, you know, we hate when conservatives or just people in general pigeonhole liberals
mm-hmm.
and, you know, mock us and make fun of us and
right.
assume that whatever. But I feel that in this one instance, we do this to ourselves.
Right.
Because I'm a liberal.
Right.
And I'm a Democrat.
Yes.
But foremost, I'm a born-again Christian.
Interesting.
And it really upsets me. This is my only little argument with Air America, is the mocking that sometimes comes across, especially in that avenue where in the morning sometimes you do the praise thing, and it's a very mocking way. The only thing I like about George Bush is that he is a born-again Christian. He sticks to his – I don't care about the political part of it, but – when he prays, wait.
You know, this is a president that justifies doing a lot of damage in the name of his religious beliefs. And if that's the only thing you like about him, that's fairly frightening to me. And as far as, you know, in terms of how we criticize Christians here and the morning devotional, which we don't do that much anymore, it's not a slight on born-again Christianness. And my personal belief with born-again, my beef with them, with born-agains, is that, you know, they are so, you know, proselytizing, they're judgmental, and they're recruiters. And, you know, they have a very narrow way of looking, you know, at the world, as far as I can tell.
You know, Kathy, this is Barry. I'm an ordained minister myself, and I do take religion and faith extremely seriously. But when I have to look at these politicians, and by the way, it's not only Republicans. Democrats I have known have done the same thing. When I think they've crossed the line into using that religion more for their own political purpose than for any kind of spiritual message, it bugs me a great deal. And I've complained about it during the last presidential cycle when Joe Lieberman was out there talking like he was trying to literally become the national rabbi of the country. I was on Fox and cable and every network every day talking either about things he said or that the would-be President Bush would say that I thought crossed the line between telling us about his spirit, telling us about what was in his heart, and trying to gain votes.
Hey,
I think you can usually tell the difference.
Yeah, Barry Lynn, Reverend Barry Lynn, the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Stay with us. We've got a lot of calls. I would like you to explain to me the difference between, you know, born-again Christianity and Christianity when we come back, because, you know, I'm being called out a lot on this stuff. So stay with us on Air America Radio. We're taking your calls, 866-303-2270. Heroes, Mark Maron, Morning Sedition, Mark Riley is here, Sue Ellicott is here.
Yep.
We have the Reverend Barry Lynn, the Executive Director of American United for Separation of Church and State, on the phone. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. This is Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's now time for the Presidential Daily Briefing. This is the highly classified top secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB called Afghanistan Refuses to Stay Liberated. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that President Hamid Karzai has been saying that violence will continue in Afghanistan. Someone needs to show this joker the record book. Next to the words war in Afghanistan, there's a big W by our name. Win. The fans tore down the goalpost and you got the Gatorade shower. It's done. The idea that the hired help by Karzai would suddenly feel comfortable expressing unapproved opinions is a direct threat to your authority. Karzai is clearly suffering under the delusion that he has some actual power. After all, we didn't lose the Arizona Cardinals' best defensive back so that some Afghan pipsqueak could shoot his mouth off. It should be noted that this doesn't mean he's wrong. There probably will be more violence in Afghanistan, and yes, Osama's probably there directing it. We just don't need some foreign bozo pointing out that kind of stuff right now. I think you'd agree we have enough on our plate. We suggest that you force Mr. Karzai to zip it up, or we'll strip him of his fancy warlord hats and send him back to pushing papers at the oil company in a bad-fitting suit. Remember, puppet strings will fit anybody. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security.
All right.
That was deep, man. Glenn in Long Island, you got a question for the Reverend Barry Lynn.
Hey, Glenn.
Hey, how are you this morning?
Good, man.
You know, they were I find it less disturbing, the under God, mostly because they kept it fairly generic, because it's whoever the God is to you. I find that much less disturbing than the push by a lot of organizations now within their own groups and hoping it will spread to add the words born and unborn to the end of the pledge.
Wow, I didn't even know about that. Barry Lynn?
I didn't hear about it either, but it's nothing in, should be put past the religious right. And even if your caller was just making that up, I can tell you that the Traditional Values Coalition, one of the religious right groups I fight all the time, recently put out a news release announcing that parents should not see the film Shrek 2 because in a scene involving Pinocchio and another scene involving Red Riding Hood, it teaches children to become cross-dressers and gives them gender.
Where do these people come up with, they're imagining things. No. They're delusional.
It's like one of the Teletubbies being gay and toddlers being banned.
Whoa. That Teletubby was gay.
Yeah, but even if the Teletubby was gay, he wasn't gay when Jerry Falwell thought he was gay.
Yeah, much later it came out. I remember it was a weird
nothing
episode.
You can say, there's literally nothing you can say that isn't likely to become true in the world of the religious right, the same world in the religious right that saw in The Lion King the word sex in the cloud formation above the head of the chief lion.
What are they, crazy? I mean, Barry, what is the... I mean, tell me, because...
No, they're not crazy. It's just that they certainly see things that others of us do not see.
But what does that mean? I mean, for a rational person, if I'm a rational person and someone is seeing something that others don't see, theoretically, it's crazy.
They're either gifted or crazy.
Yeah, or they're just obsessive. That is, there's actually a guy named Don Wildman. Don Wildman is second most important person to come out of Tupelo, Mississippi, at least in his own mind. Elvis, of course, being the first.
Yes.
He's got such a hip audience, I didn't even need to say that.
That's right.
But he counts the number of TV movies on the networks where prostitutes wear crosses so that he can complain about it. I mean, that's an obsessive guy.
He's watching them himself?
Yes, of course he's watching.
No, how magnanimous of him.
Are they just giving themselves opportunities to think about lurid things in a way that they're comfortable with?
Oh, I think there's a certain amount of that that goes on. But the Shrek 2 thing was literally the most bizarre thing I've seen in actually a number of years.
Let's take another call. Phil in Texas. Phil?
Hey, Phil. The 20 or 30 Democrats left in Texas. Damn proud of it.
Welcome to the show, sir.
I just want to know, Reverend, do you have a congregation that you preach a sermon to on Sundays? And if so, can I start a branch of your church in my hometown?
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Phil.
And they actually, being director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, reachable at www.au.org, is my full-time job. I'm frequently am preaching somewhere because I do a lot of traveling and do a lot of speaking, but I don't have my church or a church building where you can go to, but I thank you for the compliment.
The Reverend Barry Lynn, you are Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and one of the things that troubles me when we talk particularly about the religious right is the question of whether or not they can actually live up to their own piety. Because it strikes me, you know, there was a story in the papers the other day here, not to commingle politics and religion too much, but there's a story about numbers of people coming for the Republican National Convention who have already booked their spots and their lap dances at a certain gentleman's club here in Midtown Manhattan. And I'm wondering, how do these people manage to do this? How do they manage to live up to their own piety?
Well, I'll bet you that William Bennett would be a better person to talk to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He knows. He's the moral guy. He knows everything, right? That guy. He's a real moral barometer, that dude.
Yeah, I'll tell you. There's a certain human set of failings or interests in most of us, and as a consequence, it doesn't surprise me if that's true. It also doesn't surprise me to find out that on some of the bigger picture issues, these guys simply don't see what the most important moral questions are. You know, during the debate over what Bill Clinton had or hadn't done in the Oval Office,
right,
one Monica Lewinsky, I got a call from Fox. I mean, I might as well name names when
it
matters. Fox Network calls, says, Reverend Lynn, will you come over and help us answer the question, is morality on the decline in America? And I said, it's literally true. I said, do you mean I can talk about the amount of child poverty in America? And the kid doing the booking said, you think that's a moral issue?
Oh, my God.
And I said, yes, and go talk to your superiors, and if they don't think it's a moral issue, then don't call me back, and I won't be on the show. And they called me back, and they said, yeah, we're willing to let you say that. Because oral sex in the White House is not the only moral issue on the planet.
Well, that was big of them, wasn't it, Barry? Are you going to hang out with us one more second?
Yeah, absolutely, because I want to tell you my dream.
All right. The phones are on fire. Call us, 866-303-2270. We're talking to Reverend Barry Lynn from the American United for Separation of Church and State. Very exciting stuff. We'll be back after this. Hey, it's Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. We are talking to Reverend Barry Lynn, who is the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We have a great round of calls that we just had. We're running out of time, though, but right now I have to do this. I'm Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
In the recovery corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. Today, as always, I reach out to my sponsor, George W. George W., I know I've been giving you a really hard time for the past few months, but I got to say that yesterday you made me one proud sponsor. You welcomed Bill Clinton into your home, the man who humiliated your father in 1992, the man, if allowed by the Constitution, would undoubtedly be elected in a landslide again this year, and you were gracious. Sorry for saying this, but I really didn't think you had it in you. You've been me for so long that it was a real pleasure to hear you. George W., you showed humility. I don't know if you were faking it till you make it, but you looked good yesterday. What was the phrase you used? Bill Clinton brought energy and joy to the White House. Beautiful. I don't think you got that from the Star Report. On most days, you would look like one-eighth of the man Bill Clinton is, but yesterday you seemed like, well, can I admit it, like half. Way to stand tall, buddy. Remember, humility is our acceptance of ourselves. Count your blessings. Share your happiness. Bend your knee before you bend your elbow. One day at a time. Get to a meeting. Don't drink. We got one more call here for Barry Lynn, then I'm going to ask him a question about born-again versus regular Christian. Omar in Westchester. Quickly, what do you got, buddy?
Hey, Omar.
Mark, Sue, how you doing?
There he is. What's up, buddy?
What's up, baby? Good morning, Dr. Lynn. Reverend, how you feeling?
What's these all right?
I wanted to ask, I'm really concerned about this because a lot of people, politicians especially, they jump on and the first word they use is God. Now, I guarantee you as a reverend, if you ask them a question about the Bible, if it's not in their notes, they won't know about it. I mean, accountability has been the biggest word the last month and a half, and probably 3 months, actually about 3.5 years. Accountability is the biggest word that everybody in English vocabulary has to learn now.
Right, right.
People need to be held accountable for using the Bible for their own personal reasons, because how many people are dead because of this, but God wanted me to do this, and in the end,
yep.
This, we need accountability. And as a reverend,
yeah.
As somebody involved in the church, how could we start making people accountable and have to go before a committee on what part of the Bible did they use to justify an unjustified
right.
war and things of that sort?
All right. Thank you very much, Omar. I think Omar should be a reverend. You know, he
yeah,
calls
right.
every day.
Reverend Omar. Yeah.
Reverend
yeah.
Lynn, can you address that?
Absolutely. No, there does seem to be, and this goes back to my dream. I did have a dream last night in which during October we do not have presidential debates. We just have three rounds of Bible Jeopardy
right.
played by the candidates, because both of, even John Kerry, I have to say, has been lured into this idea of criticizing Bush by using holy scriptures. I don't think that's a good idea. I think people in America do want to know that candidates have a moral center. They do want to know that indeed what they say and what they do is going to come out of some beliefs they have about the people and about America and about our relationship
right.
to the world, and we ought to hold them accountable for that. We shouldn't assume, and frankly, members of the press shouldn't be asking, as they ask Howard Dean, what's your favorite book of the New Testament? You may
right,
remember
right,
he
right,
said
yeah.
the book Job, which of course is in the Christian Old Testament, showing that there are shark-infested theological waters. Once you wade into that, we are not electing a theologian-in-chief, we're electing a commander-in-chief
yeah.
in the next presidential election.
Before we run out of time, can you just help me out with this born-again versus regular Christian? I get, you know, because I tend to feel that born-agains are not necessarily regular Christians.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far, but a born-again Christian is a person who literally believes almost everything in the Bible and who literally believes that you must, as the scripture says, be born again, meaning you have to have not just a baptism, but also a personal experience with Jesus in
order to fully understand
what Christianity is all about.
Okay, well, thank you very much, man. This is really interesting. Reverend Barry Lynn, I really appreciate you being here.
Happy to do it.
Okay,
take
care.
Call me anytime.
All right,
great. That's Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Now, I guess what I'm talking about is the Christian fanatical right.
We didn't hear about his dream. He forgot to tell us.
He kind of told us a little bit about it.
A little bit, yeah. In the next hour of morning's edition, the Countdown to Democracy, the presidential Palm Pilot, plus we talk to a former Air Force lawyer about torture as we continue here on Air America Radio.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, our Countdown to Democracy continues. Plus, Dick Cheney resurrects an old lie. That's coming up. But right now, I'm joined by Mark Riley. Sue Ellicott, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
Some exciting segments, man. We got all kinds of mail. I'll read two. This one first. Your anti-Christian diatribes every morning are only driving undecideds, quote-unquote, away from us Democrats. Another programming person. This is a guy who's programming our network. Cutting off the born-again Christian Democrat this morning just as she was about to make her point was something out of a Limbaugh show. Listen, dude, I don't think I cut her off. I seem to have gotten the whole point. Maybe you missed the point. The trip was is basically she was saying that she was Democrat, she was liberal, she was born again, which means that she believes the Bible verbatim. All right, and that's one of the reasons she said that she liked George Bush is because he's steadfast in his religious beliefs, all right, in his stubbornness, perhaps, in his inability to apologize. That's very Christian. In his commitment to the rapture happening. Dude, you know, I'm not sure I want those people necessarily, you know. And, you know, thank you for the programming advice, by the way. See ya. Anyways, here's the other one. Is that all right? Everything okay?
Yeah, everything's fine.
I call myself a recovering Baptist. I earned a master's in religious education from a Southern Baptist seminary, but I have a much more open view of faith than that conservative denomination. My nephew found Jesus, quote unquote, while in prison. After he got out of prison, he broke into my house and stole my computer system to buy drugs. Later, he confessed and said he would do anything I wanted. Ended up in court to get restitution. At which time my mother lied to protect my nephew. She also quit inviting me to family functions. Now nephew is leading several Bible studies a week and fills in preaching at a couple of local churches. He has three preschool children that he says he disciplines, which means he beats them. The 15-month-old does not even react to being spanked. Mom holds a weekly Bible study.
15-month-old?
15-month-old, yeah. Mom holds a weekly Bible study at her home. That brand of Christianity is why I cannot follow the rigidity of fundamentalism.
A 15-month-old
interesting.
Who does
Two
not
sides.
React to being spanked.
Right. A pre-verbal child.
Be very, very afraid.
So many people out there with programming advice. It's always very exciting, the programming advice. Hey, you're
alienating.
Makes
my family seem happy anyway.
But you know what? You made a point about that earlier, Mark. The people who are saying that are talking not about themselves, but about their perception of other people. In other words, I'm a Democrat. But you're going to blow off swing voters, which I'm not.
But what are we doing here? We had an open conversation with a guy who was separating church and state about religion. There were no diatribes. There was no anti-Christianity. I was taught something today about what the real definition of born-again Christianity is versus the regular Christian. I learned something today, and I have come to believe that my spite and resentment is not anti-God. It's not anti-Christian. It's not anti-religion. It's anti-fanatic. It is anti-fanatical Christians who have nothing but political intent getting into this administration, being pandered to by this administration in order to fulfill an agenda to create a theocratic state out of America and bring on the rapture. These are people that believe the rapture so much that they want to bring it on with their Middle East policy. That's retarded.
Well, there's a lot retarded about this. Ask yourself this question. If people, for example, Reverend Barry Lynn earlier said that the Fox Network called him up and asked him about going on a show to talk about the decline of moral values in America. Right,
right, and he wants to talk about child poverty, and they wanted him to talk about basically oral sex scandals.
Oral sex scandals with Clinton, because they were trying to set themselves up as some moral judge. This is the same network that had that gave Paris Hilton a gig.
Right. I mean, okay. They're trying to get ratings. I don't know whether they really want to be a moral judge. They just know that more people are going to tune in to hear about oral sex than they are about child poverty.
But this administration, dude, to be moral, look, they forgive corporate greed. All right, they forgive it. They let corporate criminals out. The morality only goes so far. They want to moralize about homosexuals. They want to moralize about abortion. But what about, why don't they answer to the same questions? What about, you know, Dick Cheney's involvement with corporate greed? What about the Enron scandal? All those guys aren't even in jail. Their morality is one-sided, it's manipulated, and it's not morality at all. They're hypocrites.
Well,
it's politics, isn't it, rather than morality?
Well, they're also bumping heads with reality in Iraq, where people do not practice Christianity in the main, and where they're finding that their kind of Christian democratic initiative isn't really working. Of course, there was a rush hour bombing in Baghdad, killed 13 people, produced some very, very troubling photos of Iraqis celebrating. But there are more and more developments unfolding in the prisoner abuse scandal, which kind of got under the radar there for about a week or two. The Army is now set to release an Inspector General's report on the internment and detention policies of the United States Army. That report is expected to focus on failures at the Abu Ghraib prison. One Army officer told CNN the report says some military police and intelligence units, these are reserves, were totally unprepared to guard large numbers of prisoners. The report is also expected to recommend more training and criticize the overall command climate provided by senior personnel. Now, you know what that means, right?
What?
That means Janice Karpinski is toast, because that's who they're talking about when they say the overall command climate at Abu Ghraib. She's going to be the one that takes the fall for that. One central figure in the Abu Ghraib scandal has a court date coming. That's Reserve PFC Lindy England.
Yeah.
One of Mark's favorite people. She will be the subject of an Article 32 hearing, the military equivalent of a grand jury at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, on June 22nd, which is a week from today. So she's upcoming.
Did you see this, too? There was something in today's Wall Street Journal, which I think makes me think
that it might go. You're the only one that sees Wall Street Journal.
Well, the thing is, I believe, I am against the right-wing view of the opinion page of the Wall Street Journal, but their reporting is very sound. I think it's very easy to read, and I think that their reporters are really excellent, and it's very well written. So I know you like to get on with me about the Wall Street Journal, but that the rules for interrogations that were put into effect in Abu Ghraib were ones that were discarded as too harsh at Guantanamo Bay and that in contravention of the Geneva Conventions, and that the rules of interrogation were more loosely applied in Iraq. And this is according to interviews with people familiar with both of the prison systems in the two countries and with documents.
So what are you saying?
Well, at Guantanamo, apparently, interrogators only needed to get approval from a two-star general before they could use standard interrogation procedures such as isolation of prisoners and messing up their sleep patterns and refusing them food. And the very strictest interrogation techniques were only used on two of the detainees there. But in Iraq, interrogators who were civilian and military only needed an army colonel's permission to deprive detainees of sleep and food and to keep them isolated.
Well, they basically said that they just let these guys loose. I think what happened was is that they had all these detainees. They had these lower military people like, you know, England and the others, you know, there. And they said, look, do whatever you want. You know, beat them up a little bit. Keep, you know, soften them up. Do whatever you got to do until we get our act together to get military intelligence over there. I mean, that seems to be what happened. And these guys just went nuts.
I think this stuff will come back to haunt them. I mean, so far they've tried to say, you know, Rumsfeld said he didn't know that this stuff was going on. George Bush has said he didn't know this stuff was going on until reports came out. And it's just very, very hard to believe. It's certainly hard to believe that it didn't go all the way up to the top of the Pentagon and that they didn't sign off with some sort of tacit understanding. As we saw last week, that they said that they had White House lawyers consult on the legality of pushing the limits.
Dude, we have that whole thing right here. They
not morality. If they could get away with it by law, then as far as they were concerned, it was okay.
No, but in August 2002, they made it okay. It wasn't, you know, that. I mean, that's what this memo is all about, is that they made it so that the president, the commander-in-chief had the right to do whatever he wanted, and they did it in legal terms, and they figured out a way to, you know, get around the Geneva Convention, and basically in the unilateral thinking that these neocons are so famous for, said, and they made it okay on paper with their own lawyers to the
right.
world. It's real easy for, you know, the leader of the free world to get a lawyer to say we can do whatever we want,
right.
and they did that, and they're going to use that to protect the president and then claim that it's constitutional what they did.
And this stuff has been reported in the Iraqi media, you know, quite consistently and quite thoroughly. And what we've seen with some of the car bombings and the attacks against politicians and people involved in the new government is fury about the prison abuse. This is the consequence.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be back. Look, don't call anymore. We're not taking calls. If you want to talk, sedition@airamericaradio.com. Send us an email. We'll be back with the president's Palm Pilot, liberal agenda, and much more on Air America Radio. Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley, Morning's Edition, Air America Radio. Here we go, presidential palm pilot. I get this from my buddy who cleans up the Oval Office and steals it out of the president's palm pilot. It's a schedule for today, Bush's schedule, 8 a.m. Wake up, stay on message, Clinton bad again. Yesterday was an act. 9 o'clock a.m., check Clinton portrait for signs of aging. 10:35 a.m., meet with President of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai. Make sure everything's still in place for Operation Osama in October. 11 a.m., escort Karzai to fitting room, install new presidential puppet strings. Have him dance a little jig for you. Noon, serve traditional Afghani lunch, stale MREs dropped from helicopters. 5 o'clock p.m., prep for congressional picnic. Order Colin Powell to pooper scoop the South Lawn. 6 o'clock p.m., congressional picnic. Note, for three-legged race, do not partner with Barney Frank. 6:15 p.m., sack race with Condi. 6:30 p.m., coleslaw fight. Accused Daschle of starting it. 6:45 p.m., note, do not eat mayonnaise if translucent. 8 o'clock p.m., Republicans versus Democrats volleyball game. Make Ted Kennedy's team be skins. Ew. Yikes. 9 p.m., lights out. Eat leftover Trent Lott Jell-O salad out of Tupperware. There you go. Now we turn our attention to Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney, of course, is the vice president.
Sort of.
That's the Dick Cheney music.
Sounds like he's digging into a mine.
We all know that, dude.
That's from the Wizard of Oz.
No, I'm just film illiterate.
Really? And your husband's
just entertainment
a professional
illiterate.
Film editor.
Yes, indeed. He's the one who knows the stuff.
He knows
I know
the
nothing.
Essential language. So now Cheney's running around the country saying that Saddam has long established ties with Al Qaeda. Long established ties. Now can we just hear that George Bush statement?
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No evidence. And you also said that? Condoleezza Rice on the September 15, 2003. We have never claimed that Saddam Hussein had either direction or control over 9/11. I've not seen any indication that would lead me to believe that I could say that. Donald Rumsfeld said that. If we had a relationship with Al-Qaeda, we wouldn't be ashamed to admit it. Saddam Hussein said that himself. This is just the vice president running around the country trying to rehypnotize the stupid people, I guess, into thinking that the connection exists, because some people still believe that.
But you know what?
Yes.
All of those people that you just named?
Yes.
None of them run things. Dick Cheney runs
everything.
Things.
He's the guy.
He's the man.
Yeah.
So when he says it, it doesn't matter what George Bush said. It doesn't matter what Condoleezza said.
But what you were saying before was really right on the money. He's speaking at that,
conservative think tank, the James Madison Club or something like that?
Yeah, the James Madison Institute, a conservative think tank based in Florida. And your assumption was that he's concerned. This is not, a neocon institution. This is just regular conservatives, and a lot of them, as you were saying, are on the fence.
So he's not, in fact, speaking to his base. He's shoring up his base because his base, you think, is cracking, Riley.
Yeah, I think his base is abandoning him. His conservative, not neoconservative, but conservative base is not totally on board. We saw some stories about this 3-4 weeks ago, and I think that Cheney has specifically been detailed, or has detailed himself, to go out there and shore up that base. because, as anybody will tell you, you know, Bush needs to reach certain benchmarks in order to have any chance whatsoever of being reelected.
And fiscal conservatives are really starting to turn on him. I mean, he's making government bigger. He's depleting the national resource of money.
Well, yeah, and remember, too, that you have a group of conservatives who admire people like John McCain. Now, some people don't see McCain as a conservative, but if you look closely at his voting record, particularly when it comes to issues like choice and other things, John McCain is, in fact, a rock-ribbed conservative. And a lot of people who admire John McCain do not admire George W. Bush because they feel that he really was cavalier in taking the United States to war in Iraq. He hasn't been honest with how much the war is or is going to end up costing the American people. And he has called, and this is something that McCain called Bush on recently, he has not called on the American people to make any level of sacrifices. McCain and other fiscal conservatives can't understand how you can be so into cutting taxes and at the same time tell a nation we're at war.
Well, that's the exact that's the exact issue. It's like how if a nation is expected to make a national sacrifice, if they believe in the if they believe in the war that has been initiated, they should have no problem in making the sacrifice on a tax level. Taxes are how we pay for roads, streets, wars, schools, post offices. I mean, Americans should, you know, gladly pay a certain amount of taxes if it's not going to, you know, as opposed to break the country. I mean, for him to assume that we wouldn't make that kind of sacrifice, which I guess people would definitely have more of a right to fight against him if that's the case, but to cut taxes during wartime is heinous in terms of being a fiscal conservative.
If I can just go back just a little bit from taxes back to the opposition to Bush and the war, you know, from conservatives, it was very interesting. I saw in maybe it was out in the papers here too, it was in yesterday's European edition of the Financial Times, that more than two dozen members of the diplomatic and military elites, and this is from Democrats and Republicans, are publishing a letter this week launching an assault on the Bush administration's conduct of foreign policy. This is the 26-member group, Diplomats and Military Commanders for Change.
Yeah, we talked about that a little yesterday.
You did? Talked about it yesterday?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just very interesting, given that, you know, they've been able to dismiss so much of the professional dissent so far as coming from Paul O'Neill, the ex-Treasury Secretary, and Dick Clark, you know, who was the senior counterterrorism official. But this is the number of really prominent Republicans in this group.
That worked
and
for several presidents.
They are speaking out, absolutely. That you have to think that they are a little bit, they are definitely feeling that those eroding poll numbers are real.
And let's, you know, getting back to Cheney, this guy's a liar. He's manipulative. He doesn't have any real care or concern for the working people. He'll say whatever he needs to say, you know, and this is a guy. While serving in Congress, he was one of 21 members opposing the sale ban of armor-piercing bullets. He was one of only four to oppose the ban on guns that can get through metal detectors. He has an entire record of being just an ass.
Well, he was a hater. I mean, when he was
there
in Congress, among other things, he voted to designate the African National Congress, which now, of course, is the ruling party in South Africa, as a terrorist organization. These are the kinds of things.
Didn't he declare us a terrorist organization? Not
I
yet.
Don't know. What, Air America? He might well have at this point. We might be in deeper trouble than any of us know. But, I mean, we see across the world now the results of this administration's policy, the results of this administration not being flexible enough to understand or to say to the American people, you know what, we made a couple of mistakes. We made a couple of errors. The idea that Dick Cheney would go back to the well and try and prove a link between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. And, of course, you know, there are going to be people who are, I guess, Bush true believers who say, well, look, you know, there's all this violence going on in Saudi Arabia and this one. And, of course, Paul Johnson was supposedly abducted by members of al-Qaeda, but that was not in Iraq. It was, in fact, in Saudi Arabia. And, you know, there were 14 of the 19 hijackers that were involved in September 11th were from Saudi Arabia.
And let's not forget, there is a link between al-Qaeda and Iraq now.
Yeah.
There wasn't one, but there is now. The U.S. occupation of Iraq brought 1,000 at least foreign Islamic fighters into the country who weren't there before. But getting back to Saudi Arabia.
Right. This is what Richard Clark said this week in an interview, that, you know, confirming all of that stuff that we said before, that, you know, the war was a great propaganda coup for the jihadist movement. It wasn't that terrorism existed in Iraq, but it became this sort of magnet that kind of drew people in there afterwards. That's what's happening now.
Well, they're continuing to urge Americans to leave Saudi Arabia. In fact, the son of Paul Johnson Jr., who is the American from New Jersey who has been supposedly abducted by an Al-Qaeda cell inside Saudi Arabia. His son is saying all Americans, all 35,000, because there are 35,000 working in Saudi Arabia, so they should all get out of the country. So there seems to be at least some consensus on that, but my guess is people are going to stay. The money that people can make working in Saudi Arabia sometimes is a lot more than they can make back here stateside.
Most people go there for the jack. For the money, for the cash, for the Benjamins, for the green.
Yes.
And there's a lot of criticism that Saudi Arabia is not doing enough in terms of anti-terrorism. And yes,
that's clear.
Yes, they have clamped down on Islamic charities and other groups that are linked to terrorism, but they've been very criticized in a task force report from the Council on Foreign Relations this week. Mm-hmm. They just have not done enough.
Yeah, I can't believe that Bush's approval ratings for his reaction to terrorism is still so high. I mean, what are people like?
Don't worry, there's another poll coming soon. Coming up, the liberal agenda. Former Air Force lawyer Scott Silliman and you on the phone. And don't forget the countdown to democracy here on Air America Radio.
Good morning, it's Mark Maron on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. Man, I'm whacked on coffee. All right, whacked. Man, it's beautiful. So we're going to talk now. We have a guest, and his name is Scott Silliman. He is a former U.S. Air Force lawyer and the director of the Center for Law, Ethics, and National Security at Duke University. We're going to be talking now, hopefully, about this August 2002 Justice Department memo on torture, which enabled this administration to circumvent the Geneva Conventions. And we want to know about, you know, how the military feels about this, and also, you know, is the prison abuse probe widening? Is there more that's going to be revealed? Hello. Good morning, Scott Silliman. How are you?
Fine, Mark. Good morning. Pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you. So what is the military reaction to this August 2002 Justice Department memo on torture, if you can go into that a little bit?
Well, I think I can, Mark. And it's not just the August 2002 memo. As your listeners may know, there's a series of memos covering almost 18 months, going all the way back to late 2001, mm-hmm. most of them originating out of the Office of Legal Counsel and the Department of Justice.
Right.
And the central theme, Mark, that runs through all of them is that because the war on terrorism is very much like a traditional war, such as World War II, the last declared war this country was involved in, that when the president makes decisions with regard to the gathering of intelligence through interrogation of captives,
right,
that is just like a battlefield tactic that a general on the battlefield is deciding whether to attack and how to attack. And traditionally, the courts and the Congress have given the president full deference with regard to that type of decision. These memos argue that interrogation tactics are just like battlefield tactics. The president cannot be challenged, will not be challenged by either the courts or the Congress, by federal law or by international law. It's a breathtaking theory, Mark.
Are they using the Constitution to defend that?
Well, what they're saying is that the president's authority under Article 2 of the Constitution as commander-in-chief basically is a grant of authority which is such that neither the Congress nor the courts can interfere.
Okay. Now, just tell me the difference between a JAG and a military lawyer, and what's going on between those two camps?
Well, a JAG is generally a military lawyer, what's called a judge advocate, what we call a uniformed lawyer, Mark.
Okay.
Now, what's happening is that there was a working group that met in the Pentagon a little over a year ago in March of 2003, and they were charged with presenting guidance to Secretary Rumsfeld with regard to the interrogation techniques to be used at Guantanamo Bay. And we need to separate for your listeners, these tactics, these memos, were all with regard to what was going on in Guantanamo Bay, not Iraq.
Right.
Because the assumption was that the president had determined that the Geneva Conventions did not apply to those that were holding at Guantanamo Bay. The working group was presented with these OLC, Department of Justice, memos, and the military lawyers, the judge advocates,
right,
had a great deal of concern about this theory, because if, in fact, you craft a legal regime, Mark, to shield anyone from war crimes, then what in effect we are doing is setting a precedent that will come back to haunt our own servicemen in the years to come. And I totally agree with that concern.
Scott Silliman, you're a former U.S. Air Force lawyer and the director of Center for Law Ethics and National Security at Duke University. The problem I have with the point that you made right at the top of our conversation is that it seems that no one can be held responsible. If you apply that the commander-in-chief can do whatever you want in a battleground situation, who can we ever hold responsible for abuse?
Well, the theory, Sue, is that if neither the Congress nor the courts can challenge the President of the United States, then the only accountability mechanism is through the political process, which is to vote that president out of office, or in theory, I guess, to try to impeach him. But again, I'm not saying I agree with the theory, and I think you would find that many lawyers, even the most conservative, have difficulty accepting it.
But this does nothing to compensate or to do anything to help, you know, victims of any abuses.
No, that would be a totally separate matter. And your listeners may know that there is a legislative proposal to, in fact, give compensation to those that were abused in the prisons in Iraq. That's a separate issue. That would be a matter for an ex gratia payment. But these memos, what is disturbing to me about them is that they are actually geared to avoid prosecutions. They are meant to shield an individual from prosecutions. They're not just setting out legal options. They are meant to protect those who violate the law. And I think from a former military point of view, I am greatly disturbed that we are heading in that direction, both from a legal and a moral point of view.
Scott Silliman, I think a lot of people might look at the totality of this, all of these memos. And as you very correctly point out, they were actually pertaining to Guantanamo Bay, but then there was one of the generals from Guantanamo ended up in Iraq. Would a cynic be really far off in saying that this whole scenario was constructed so that the people at the top would not have to take any weight and that the grunts would end up paying, which is what we're starting to see now?
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with that. I think what we can say is that these memos and the techniques that evolved from them for use at Guantanamo Bay quite possibly were exported to Iraq when Major General Miller, who was in charge of Guantanamo Bay, was sent by the Pentagon, by Steve Gambone and Doug Feith, to Iraq to talk with them with the thought of increasing the productivity of the interrogation sessions over in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, it is acknowledged that there was some discussion of what Miller was able to do at Guantanamo Bay. Attorney General Ashcroft last week told the Senate Judiciary Committee that there was no, quote, direct, quote, link between these memos and the Abu Ghraib prison abuses. He may be right that there's no direct link. I would suggest that from a cultural point of view, there is certainly an indirect link, because when you start discussion of these extraordinary techniques, you cannot but expect that they will somehow filter down, even by implication, through military intelligence channels and end up resulting in possibly some of the abuses that all of your listeners saw in the papers and in the television last April.
It sort of snowballs and becomes just the way things are done.
I think it is. But what really bothers me is that we are not just talking about the law. We're talking about the creation of a counterculture of evasion of international and domestic law.
Right.
We as a nation, for 50 years at least, since the signing of the Geneva Conventions, have touted ourselves to our own citizens and to the rest of the world as being a nation under the rule of law. Every member of the military is trained in compliance with the Geneva Conventions, international law. Our official government policy is to comply with the law, regardless of how we characterize a conflict. These memos that I think were never meant to see the light of day suggest that there was a counterculture being developed by government lawyers, objected to by the military lawyers, that in fact was going the other way.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. That's some important information. Scott Silliman, really appreciate you being here.
My pleasure.
Okay. That was Scott Silliman, former U.S. Air Force lawyer and director of the Center for Law and Ethics at National Security at Duke University. Call us, 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. Let's get your feedback on these memos and on anything you want to talk about. I know you got something to say. Call us, Air America Radio. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here. Morning's Edition, Air America Radio.
Hey.
Stu Ellicott is here.
Hey.
Mark Riley's here on Air America Radio.
God,
we're
I know this song.
Taking your calls, 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Some people are pretty worked up, but let me do this first. You know this song?
Who knows?
Big Country.
No, that's right. I remember that too.
Who knew bad parts could be bearable this early in the morning?
It's time for the countdown to democracy as the deadline for handover power to the Iraqis' approaches. We like to explore various issues, you know, and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. Today's issue is public celebration. Leaders of Iraq. Hey, quiet down, people, please. This will only take a minute. But come on. All right, now in a democracy, there is something called the right to peaceable assembly. All right, please. Peaceable, all right? That's better. That means you can gather in the street and speak your mind. That doesn't mean setting cars on fire or shooting in the air. Yeah, like that. That's rioting, all right? I know what you're thinking. Hey, America, we've seen the videos. You guys can't give out an NBA trophy without a certain amount of looting and car tipping. Fine. We love our sports, all right? Sue us. Okay, all right. But the point is, when we riot, our police riot back. They don't stand around watching and smoking like it's some kind of TV movie. Your cops need to take a page from Saddam's playbook and bust a few heads. A little tip. The first person you should always arrest is the guy with no shirt and the Iraqi flag painted on his face. All right? Once he's handcuffed and in back of the squad car, the rest of them will drift back into the bars. All right? So now good luck and God bless. This is day 15 in our countdown to democracy. Live free or die. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. All right. Who do we got? We got Robert in Kansas City. How are you?
Fine. Good morning.
How you
morning.
Doing?
Hey, listen, I have a suggestion that you ought to change the name of your show.
Uh-oh. To what?
Change it to Cheap Shots instead of Morning Edition, because that's not all you're doing.
All right.
You're taking esoteric statements, and, you're taking timelines, and then you want to insult people's intelligence. I mean, people know the details. You just can't keep trying to act like there's a doctrine by just talk about on-the-surface statements. And about the born-again Christian,
uh-huh.
I'm a born-again conservative trucker.
Mm-hmm.
And you either take it serious. You're either a Christian or you're not a Christian. I mean, you either take it seriously or you don't. Same thing with Islam.
Right.
You know, the fanatics, they take their religion seriously, and then, people want to believe that Islam is a peaceful religion because of all the other people that don't take it seriously.
Yeah, I understand.
But
yeah.
If you follow it by the book, Islam is not a peaceful religion.
Well, I mean...
Hold up. What book are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the Islamic religion as related to the Quran and their other
and
rights.
The Quran, where in the Quran, quote me something that advocates specific violence in the Quran.
Well, first of all, I mean, in the Quran, there's not one statement about their God.
No. You quote me, I'm not asking you what's not in it. I'm asking
Allah,
you to quote
Allah
me one
loveth,
statement.
Allah loveth those that fighteth for his cause.
Well, I mean, you can find
that. That's the only time love is mentioned in the Quran.
You can also find that stuff in the New
Testament. In the Quran? Fightus?
You can find a lot of bloody stuff in the New Testament, too. I understand what you're saying, Robert. Thanks for your call. All right.
Yeah, that must be the King James version of the Quran, because I've never heard the Quran ever recited with the term fightus in it.
All right. Well, there definitely are Islamist propaganda manuals around which, advocate violence, but that is not my understanding of the Quran. I'm willing to understand I'm not an expert on all of this, but I think people have been very careful to try to make a separation between, peace-loving Muslims and kind of radical fundamentalists who advocate violence, and it's a small number relative to the entire Muslim population.
There are fanatical Christians that advocate killing abortion doctors. I mean, it goes both ways, you know, and I don't know that I'm taking a cheap shot. I'm more than open, you know, to discussion and to learning. Here's an email. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it helps to bludgeon the many thousands of well-intentioned Christian people who are trying to do the right thing. The others, quote, in parentheses, fanatics, are Christian in name only. No, they're not. Christian does not mean good or bad. It means you believe in Christ, and they do. So, I mean, you know, it's an argument that, you know, obviously has a lot of dimension, makes people pretty crazy. Brad, what's going on, Brad?
I want to tell you guys, you really have stirred the pot today, haven't you?
The hornet's nest.
That's right, Brad.
It is a hornet's nest. I want to tell you, though, your last caller from KC really puts forward the point that we here, I'm in California, you guys are in New York, we need to keep in mind that middle American attitude that is not like either of the coasts here, that, you know, is going to read things into some of these texts. And I also want to make a point regarding your guest and the torture issue, that really this makes us no better than the people that we claim that we are trying to defeat.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. The Geneva Convention was put in place as a barometer to everyone's behavior, but primarily to guarantee that our soldiers wouldn't be treated, you know, in the same way that they treated.
By the way, our last guest is a Republican.
Yeah, that's true. We're still taking your calls. Seems pretty exciting. 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. When we come back on the other side. We're surfing on out of here. That's right.
Book 'em, Dano. Murder one.
Out. Mark Maron on Morning Sedition. Mark Riley's there. Sue Ellicott is here. This is Air America Radio. We've created some fury out there and some adoration. As a liberal Christian, I appreciate your so-called Christian bashing. The kind of Christians you bash make the rest of us look bad. That's just the beginning of that one. Carolyn, Wisconsin. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
The Republican caller from California,
yes.
Who said something about the people on the coast being more sophisticated than the people in the heartland.
I've met some of the smartest people.
My alma mater, Northwestern University, is one of the most wonderful universities in the United States. And
great school.
University of Chicago is right here.
Excellent town.
Wisconsin was the only state that ever sent a socialist.
Yeah, back when socialism and populism was still the Democrats.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had Milwaukee had socialist mayors.
Mm-hmm.
And when Daniel Holland became the first socialist mayor of Milwaukee, mm-hmm. first thing he did is got rid of the horses, because the horses were used to break up the unions.
Great history of humanity down there.
Yeah.
So what's on your mind, Carol?
Well, I'm an atheist.
Yes.
And I, of course, believe, you know, I send my daughter to Catholic schools.
Right, just to learn.
Right, just to learn. And I also send her to learn about the canon of Western Civ.
So we know the rules of civilization.
Well, I don't think the Catholics are going to teach us that. But, I mean, the Western Civ, I mean, so much of European history has to do with the church.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the canon of Christianity, which
no,
are some
No, the Western Civ.
So you're saying that, you're basically saying that it's okay to have a religious knowledge, but you don't have to be religious.
It didn't hurt me. I turned out fine. I went to Catholic schools all my life, and I'm a perfectly rational person.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being out with Carol, and thank you for calling. Really appreciate it. Quickly, Teresa in Connecticut.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Quickly.
Hi.
How are you?
You guys are fabulous.
Thank you.
And I just want you to know that I was raised an atheist, and I now go to a UCC church. And what I love about your show and I love about this church is they say, you don't have to check your brain at the door.
Right.
Oh, wow. What part of Connecticut, by the way?
Milford, Connecticut.
Oh, I know Milford. Very
good. Yeah? Oh, it's a great place, and it's a great church, and I think you guys are doing a great job because you make people think.
Thank you so much, Teresa. That's very nice.
Thank you.
We're just trying to have a little exciting, you know, hostile.
Well, you know, you guys you bring up a lot of good issues, and you're hysterically funny, and I love you.
Thank you. Oh, that's so great
Thanks
to
a lot.
Hear. Yeah. Thank you for calling.
Okay, bye.
All right.
So we're just trying to, you know, get a little conversation going. You know, these
people, a little seditious. So,
yeah, some of these people are still mistaking me as a Christian basher, and I'm just not. You know, I'm very open to hearing both sides.
He bashes everybody.
A lot of Christian principles are definitely principles that one can live by. Oh, there we go.
Uh-oh.
This should guide us. There's our liberal agenda from the Streisand compound.
Here she comes.
Get your notebook and your pens out. Here we go. Here are your marching orders. Number one, every time someone sneezes, loudly say, "Goddess bless." Two, try to breed a genetic line of stem cells that are pure Democrat. Three, organize black tie cocktail party for Saddam Hussein's legal defense fund. Four, stand on Ronald Reagan's grave until you're sure that he's dead. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, Bush should pay for the deficit by selling his plasma for the next 50,000 years, end quote. Not sure what it means, but it's going to be a conversation stopper. And thank you for all your calls of all kinds. If I cut anybody off, did not mean to. Sometimes we run out of time. Have a good day.
You know, that was a really nice close, Maren.
If I offended anybody, I did mean to.
No, I think that was a really one-world close.
Thank you
really
very much.
Really nice way to say, hey, we enjoyed the 3 hours. We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Then coming up on tomorrow's Morning's Edition, comedian Judy Gold.
Yay.
She's loud. She's Jewish. She has sex with women, and she's really, really tall. That's tomorrow's Morning's Edition. Up next is Unfiltered with Liz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow here on Air America Radio.